You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
Are you ready to rock the place out, dude?
Ultimate hype man.
He was on fire last night.
And it's all because you guys like to drink beer.
Word association before we get you out of here. Eddie Johnson.
Twister.
When will we see Simon Borg taking over Snapchat and MLS?
Do you know
what Snapchat is, since winky faces are not your thing?
No, I do, and Snapchat wanted all my contacts, and I refused to give it my contacts.
Simon, you are an idiot.
We can't prove it!
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com. It's SiriusXM FC Channel 85, a very special Tuesday edition for you here. Of course, the holiday weekend, all of us off doing our own things. I am Andrew Wiebe, with me David Goss. Also, Ben the Research Bear will join us here. We might just keep him on for the whole show. This is going to
be a bear-heavy show.
Yeah, bear-heavy. Very, very bear-heavy. I had a great weekend. It was a great action. A lot of MLS action this weekend. Actually, not a lot. Half the MLS action.
Yeah. Not a lot of MLS action at all.
Yeah, but I was relaxing in Pennsylvania. Amish country, so that was nice. You guys have a good weekend? Everything good here? You're looking refreshed?
I'm on the grind. I was here Saturday night in the office, you know, just grinding away.
Six boxing in front of these TVs?
Yeah, exactly,
okay,
yeah.
I see you. I see you.
I worked Friday night, Saturday night, and Sunday night.
Wow, I feel
it was a good
now.
Time.
Wow. Yeah,
it was a good golfing. Time. I went swimming in a creek.
You sounded very
ate some
relaxed.
Crabs. It was a great, great time. Look, we got a great show for you today. Oscar Pareja, profe, as Simon calls him, and apparently most of the Spanish speaking world, he will join us here in the first segment. FC Dallas with a very, very young team that went to Columbus and frankly laid the smackdown on Crew SC. A big win for FC Dallas. Montreal, Drogba, all this stuff. The U.S. national team knocking off Peru. The Canadian men's national team looks like they've sealed their place in the fourth round.
Whoa, don't do that.
What, no? Oh, yeah.
Easy.
Right.
Don't do that.
Easy. I'm knocking on the fake wood here.
Yeah, that's. I'm sorry.
If I was a Canadian fan, I'd be furious
at
you right now.
That was a really
This is
bad.
A very Simon Bug moment for me, but I would still be furious.
No, really, that's a bad misstep from me. And then we hit the mailbag. We got some more random MLS sightings. Keep those trickling in. And then football versus football. You'll find out what that means come the third segment. Let's get right into it, guys. Didier Drogba. He is the absolute star of the week, and he might be the star of the rest of the season. We don't know yet, but a hat trick in his first MLS start. Of course, he made his debut as a substitute against the Philadelphia Union. He is the first player in MLS to score a hat trick in his first start. Nobody has scored a hat trick in their debut, so he just narrowly missed that one had he not made that sub appearance. But it was the perfect hat trick as well. Right foot, left foot, header. I mean, this was electric. This was everything you could want from this game, whether you're a Montreal fan or an MLS fan. I had goosebumps just thinking about it right now. I have goosebumps.
And it couldn't have come at a better time, right? You let the coach go. You sold out the last game when he debuted. They didn't get the win against a struggling Philly team, so you don't want the fans to start to turn on it. Everyone comes out again. Everyone's excited. A big victory to put themselves back in the playoff conversation on a weekend when TFC loses as well.
Back in the playoff conversation?
Back in the playoff place.
There you go.
In the TFC loses as well. So it was kind of everything they needed, and that's what you need from your superstar, right?
So 31 points on 24 games for the Impact. They have 10 games left, so the most games in hand in the league. They're 1 point ahead of the Union for that final spot out east. But what are you coming with? Yeah,
four games in hand. I mean, so they have a comfortable lead at 1.29 points per game over the Union, who are at 1.07 points per game. Mm-hmm. They're only up 1 point, but they have four games in hand. But if you want to say, oh, games in hand don't mean anything, just look at their upcoming schedule. They're going to L.A. You know, nobody wins that game.
No, they're probably going to win that one.
At San Jose, which Philly just won, which we'll talk about later. But, you know, it's going to be a tough game. Then they got to go to – then they're home for the Revs. So those next three games, it's going to be – they'd be lucky to get a point, maybe four. So that's not really going to put them that much far ahead. It could be closer than we think.
Yeah, it could be some rough times for Montreal if they can't get it together. Look, Didier was great in this game. There's no doubt about it. He did his thing. He was like a wrecking ball through Eric Gehrig on that first goal. Two nice finishes as well. But after this game, he said he sees room for improvement in this team, and he's not going out on a limb by saying that. He said it's not a good result. 4-3, the defense continues to struggle. Is this a team that's looking at a wild card spot, all right?
Yeah. I mean 100% looking at a wild card spot. In their defense, they had Donny Torres starting at center back. They were missing Simon, missing. I'm
Ayango.
Ayango. Who else? The other center.
Yeah,
Cabrera.
Cabrera. Yeah. I mean, they were missing.
Piatti was back for this. That was a nice little.
He played really well.
But they were missing Venegas.
The fact they gave up
the field.
The fact they gave up three goals, I think, is a lot to do with the fact they had Donny Toya playing center.
Also,
which he's a good fullback, but not really a center back.
Going on the flip side, just for a second, Chicago Fire have put up goals since Gilberto's come in, so it's not an embarrassment. Igbona Nike is starting to finish his opportunities.
Starting to come good.
Yeah. So I don't think. Yeah, you don't want to win a game 4-3 because you don't want to give up three goals, but I don't think it's the worst result defensively in the world, like you said, with the players that they were missing.
Chicago just 4 points out of the playoff mix. They do have 27 games played, so Montreal Impact still have a leg up on them. We'll see what happens. You mentioned it, though. Montreal going to L.A. on Saturday, 10:30 Eastern, TVA Sports in Canada, MLS Live here in the U.S. That's a game that I don't think anybody is going
and
to
And I think
to
it's
miss.
A game they have a shot at. I think the way they play – I think that they can.
Wow,
they
that's
can,
a strong.
They
statement.
Can sit back defensively. I think Venegas, Mapp, and Piatti on the counter, and Drogba. We see if you give him one opportunity, he can finish.
Let alone three. We'll talk about that more on Thursday, of course. Moving down the line on Saturday in MLS, Seattle with a big 2-1 win against Toronto. Deuce is loose. He's back. He had an assist. He had a goal. Oba had a goal. Seattle are okay, it seems, if they've got these two players in the lineup. They're now up to fourth in the Western Conference, 41 points on 28 games, but Sporting Kansas City behind them, 1 point behind them, 3 games in hand. Portland Timbers have 1 game in hand and are just 1 point back. So still kind of tenuous times for the Sounders, but they don't, you know, Clint's going to stay. That's a big deal for them. Toronto, on the other hand, they were missing everybody. They did have Michael Bradley, but they were gutted. Injuries and international break really hitting them hard. What I want to know is, between these two teams, who are you betting on having the better October? Because I think September is going to matter, but October is going to be the real stretch run for both of these teams. It's going to take a little bit of time for them to recover from this international break. Who do you like going better? You know what? I'm going to push it up to November. I'm going to say, let's say both these teams make it. Who has a better shot in the playoffs?
Right now, I'm going Toronto. I mean, they play in the East, right?
Yep.
So, I mean, that's a pretty easy answer to me. They play in the East. Seattle plays in the West, which right now, I'd say they're maybe the sixth best team. Maybe. I mean, they did not play well in this game. So, they're maybe the sixth best team in that tough conference. Toronto, on their good days, could easily be the second best team in that conference.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Toronto has the talent here. It's about getting it together. We're still waiting to see what's happening with Giovanni. That is going to make a big – not Giovanni. There's too many Gios. Giovinco, he's still got that adductor injury, remember. So
they're saying he's going to play this week.
I know. They're always going to say that, though. They're always going to play it right. San Jose 1, we mentioned them. Philadelphia 2, Connor Casey, man. It seems like about 4 or 5 times a year, Connor Casey comes out of hibernation and just drops 2 goals or wins a game for the Union. He did it again in this one. 2 goals for them. That's a huge blow for San Jose. They're still in it in that playoff race, but at home against the Union, you feel like that was probably a must-win for them. We'll see what they can do going forward. Then New England 3, Orlando nothing. Jermaine Jones, he wasn't there. We said he was the key. The guys we didn't mention, Dave, were Kellen Rowe, Diego Fagundes,
yeah.
Who's really, really having a comeback season.
And someone sent us a good email reminding us that we forgot that. Those two moves turned this team around this season. Last year was putting Terrence Boyd in the starting lineup. Why did I just say Terrence Boyd? Yeah. Teal Bunbury. This year.
They do look kind of like.
That's some dyslexia going on here on ETR.
This year it's the bringing in Fagundes. And for some people who are maybe a little bit quicker to be negative like me, you kind of thought, his
you gave up on
was
him?
Going. It felt like it was circling a drain that he wasn't going to reach the heights
circling
in
circling a drain.
Wasn't going to reach
guy
the heights
not
in
like
MLS.
35 years old.
Jeez. Wasn't going to reach the heights
he's 20,
in MLS
20
that we
old.
Thought he would.
14 starts this year, 4 goals, 4 assists. He's starting to pick it up. He's just 1 goal away from matching his numbers in 2014. Before we get to Profe, Oscar Pareja, FC Dallas, let's run the rule over another result this week. In Columbus hosting FC Dallas, they lost 3-0, a big loss for Crew SC. But the notable thing in this match, the second youngest lineup fielded this season by Dallas, 23 years, 143 days. That is precocious, Ben. That's something special. But what I'm wondering is, what's number one? What could possibly be younger than this?
Like, let's go all the way back to a month ago.
Oh, remember really when, throwing back the throwing
really
it back
going to the time machine. It was a strange time back then.
Yeah, it
was. We were still in the summer then. When RSL was in the midst of their CCL, Open Cup, all those games, they played at Vancouver, and they basically, I'm going to say, punted the game, and they ended up losing 4-0 in Vancouver. They had guys like Sebastian Saucedo in there. They had
Justin Glad,
Fanuel Kavita. Olmes Garcia started that game, so that was the youngest.
Yeah, went with the youngsters. Let's talk to the guy who put this lineup out. Oscar Pareja, the head coach of FC Dallas, played the kids this weekend and got the job done. A 3-0 win against Crew SC. He's on the phone now. Oscar, how's it going?
Doing well. Doing well. We're happy, especially after our last game where we could get 3 points, and as you mentioned, you see all those guys performing on the tough match. So we're pleased, you know, that after the winning always is a good day.
So we looked at the stats. This is the second youngest starting 11 in MLS this year. The only one younger was Real Salt Lake, and they played mostly USL guys in that game. You guys had international call-ups. You had maybe some injury issues, but you've got no problem playing your kids. And I think a lot of people in a league like this where it's a result premium, result-driven league, they ask why. Why are you so comfortable with this?
Well, I think there's a few factors there. First, obviously, the demands of the national team calls and the injuries, and obviously the most important one, which is trying to create a different model in our club and provide these youngsters an opportunity to play and something that we enjoy. I think the confidence that we have on these kids has been growing also during the year, and this is due to their job. They made me feel every day more comfortable on playing them, and I think both of us, I'm saying the player and the coaches, are growing in that regard. So I think that the confidence that we have for players and players for coaches is important.
Does a win like this, is it? I know every win is big. I'm sure that you savor all of them. But when you play your young guys like this and they come through with such flying colors, is it a little bit more special to you? Is it? You know, does it say, you know what, we're doing things right. Things are going the way that we'd like them to go, and these kids they're taking on responsibility and coming through.
Exactly, yeah. And it's more important, and it's more relevant for us, the victory, knowing that when we get those 3 points with players that came out of the academy program, and they proven to themselves that they can played in the big game, and also when the pressure is on, it's easier sometimes to play them in under different circumstances when there is not points relating there, or some other games where don't have the meaning of the games that at this point you are playing for on a spot in the playoffs, and see these guys embracing the opportunity, and see these guys to take the responsibility for me is fantastic, and I can be prouder than that.
Coach, for you, the way you see it, what is it that FC Dallas is doing that's better than other clubs in MLS? What is it that's made it so that you guys have so many young players that are capable of playing at the MLS level? Is it just the talent in the area, or is there something that you guys have really found?
We start this program with the academy, always thinking that we could develop some players from the community, or players that can adapt to the habits that we can create here. We knew by then that it would take some time. Well, at first, it was a group, and I remember pretty well the 91s. When we started the program, and some of them started showing that they could get an opportunity in the first team. Then were the 92s, and 92s were stronger. So all the work that we did during those times, not just with those groups that were the first ones, but the other ones at that time that we started from a different category, and we're talking about the 98 and Alex and Deja's cases, and Coy Kraft and other players, and we had the opportunity to have them for 5, 6, 7 years. And then now we can get the results. We can see these guys adapting much better to the training and adapting much better to the idea that we have. Development is not just 1 year or 2 years. It takes long, and that's the only way you can see the players with the first team comfortable.
Is there any sort of philosophy or DNA style or mentality that an FC Dallas Academy graduate has, that's something that the main tenant that you're trying to push on them?
Yeah, we try from the beginning to make these kids feel that they have a professional path. I like them to train beside the first team field. We changed a few years ago the schedule, so they're going to school, but they're going to school in a different time, and so I can see the academy training in the morning in front of us. So there is much better opportunity for me to bring these kids into the first training, into the first team training and more frequently. So they used to compete with the big boys all the time. So there is not strange for them go and match the physicality and all those things. The scheduling is helping us, so we can have the guys more frequently. I can see them every day, so I know where they are. They don't train in a different timing, so as I say, well, for us it's much better to track them up. And the professionalism that we put into the program for the first time they come into the club is also crucial. So they can see that there is a goal and they're aiming to be part of the first team. And so there's some belonging there from the beginning.
Now, what some people might not know, Profe, is that you followed this path, of course, as well. But in Colombia, for Medellin, I believe you were the captain at age 20 for Independiente. Is that right? And what do you remember from those days? You've been through this. Did you take lessons that maybe you went through and have tried to apply them to these kids that you're now trying to bring up?
Yeah, that's correct, and that's a very good point. I think the first one to believe on the model or the program, he has to be a head coach, and I'm always remembering the times when I was 17, and I had a coach that came out one day and gave me an opportunity to played in front of 40,000 people, and he was not afraid. Or maybe he was, as sometimes we are. But he took the risk and gave me that opportunity. That was the only way that I learned, and I have, and I grew my confidence, and I grew up my game. I was having someone who took the risk early, and I was improving there. So he kept that. I kept in my mind all the time. I say, well, if someday I'm a coach, I would like to have the courage to play the youngsters and let them fail, let them win, let them lose games, and embrace the opportunity. Somebody has to take that risk, and I took myself as an example for me work, and I think for many others can.
Coach, you just mentioned your upbringing, the academies in Colombia. We've seen Colombia right now, one of the top international programs in the world. So many young, talented players coming up. Is there any differences that you see between the U.S. style and the Colombia system?
It's changing. I have seen some differences. The frequency of training, when we started the academy here, it was a big difference. So we had... Well, first, when we started the league here, it was not too many involvement of a program that was connected with the first team. So that for me was a huge difference. It was a lot of youth clubs, but I don't think it was a real connection from a program with the first team. And I thought the league has done a great job on providing that path. And second, the frequency of training it was important, because now we're coming from training just twice a week our youngsters training them 5 times a week and have them involved in the game as much as we can. That has some similarities with the models in South America or Europe. And the other part is the competition. The competition needs to be high all the time. And then this country, sometimes it's a challenge because the distances, the tournaments and the different levels, there's not a frequent that you can have a good match every week in our countries or in Europe. Normally, these players have high competition every weekend, so they used to that stress. We're trying to make that happen here in Dallas on providing the players an early tough competition, make them feel uncomfortable, creating a scenario where there is stress, pressure, responsibility, get the parents aside of the field and obviously get the involvement that we need from them, but not necessarily coaching the boys and all those things we are trying to improve every day.
Seeing dividends right now through the academy. One guy who didn't come through the FC Dallas Academy that's really turned MLS on its head is Fabian Castillo. He got his first call up to Colombia. I know that has to be very special for you as a former international. How did this all come about? Did you get a call from the Colombians? Did you talk to them? How much pride do you have in something like this for Fabi?
All right, yeah, Fabian has received his opportunity to be part of the camp first time with the senior national team, this time in well-deserving. I thought a competition in Colombia is very hard. As you know, that the players who are called to the camps or they went to the World Cup or the Copa America, those guys are performing in the best teams in Europe. So I could see that it was difficult to make part of the roster. And also, because I didn't think the Major League Soccer was or received the value that we deserved in front of the soccer world community. Now it's changing. I think they have seen grown. They have seen how much the league has improved. I think the attention has put us in a different stage, and as a consequence of it, I think they turn out they look to players like Fabian and see that he is performing as good as many of those guys, and finally he received that opportunity. I'm proud of Fabian, I am, but I'm very proud as well from the league. I thought the league has put these guys in a different stage, and that's important.
Now, Coach, what people may not know about Fabian's journey here with FC Dallas is that he lived with you for a little while, so this is something that you guys have a special connection in that sense. I'm going to ask you for a little bit of a detail. He was your roommate, and as we all know, some roommates have things that they do that maybe not everybody likes. Was Fabian a clean guy? Do you have any complaints about living with Fabian?
Well, yeah, the adaptation sometimes for the foreign players here, especially the ones who came from South America, is important. I had the adaptation for me. It was not easy either when I came, so I really learned what it takes to make things happen here and how can I help to speed this adaptation up to other players. And then when Fabian came, I have first the relationship we had since I was scouting him in Colombia, but second, the person that he really trusted when he came. So I asked the ownership just to let him stay at home, so my wife and my kids can be his family, and I can act as a parent figure for him, so he needs some direction. And it worked pretty well. We create a good relationship at home, and he started just worrying about other stuff and he found a family here with my kids and my wife, and I thought that was important. Now the respect and the friendship that we have, I think he goes beyond that. You know, I know him pretty well. I know what buttons he needs to be pushed for him. Mostly all the time. Sometimes it doesn't work still, but I'm very close with Fabian and inside, you know, and that's that has gave me the opportunity to keep helping him in the best way possible.
One last one for you, Profe. I'm curious, you know, Fabian Castillo might get his first cap here. Think back. What about your first cap? What do you remember from your first Colombia cap?
We were always special. Always special. I was part of the youngsters with the 17s and 20s, but when you get the call with the first one, with the senior national team, it's totally different. As you know, that you are among the best players in the country, obviously, and I know how Fabian feels. I spoke with him this morning, and I know he feels a little bit nervous. But I think the pride of feeling that you're representing your country, you will stay there forever. And I hope for Fabian, this could be not just the first one, but a big push for Fabian to get to the next level. For me, it was fantastic. I still remember I was playing against the Chile national team. Friendly game, and as I say, that stayed forever in your memories. It's special.
Special things for Fabian Castillo. Special things for FC Dallas. They lead Major League Soccer in points per game. They've got New York City FC this weekend. Oscar, thank you for joining us. Thank you for your insight. As always, good luck the rest of the way. Okay.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much, and for the opportunity to share this.
New York City FC, FC Dallas, 8:30 p.m. on Saturday night. You can watch the youngsters. You can watch their stars. Fabian Castillo, would he get his first cap? Who knows? Let us know what you think about anything we talked about here in the first segment at Extra Time Radio, extratimeandlssoccer.com. When we come back, it's all about the U.S.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hi, this is Josie Altador from the U.S. National Team, and you're listening to MLS Extra Time Radio.
I can't stay awake for worrying. You know I can't sleep for crying.
Back now on Extra Time Radio with the guys, David Goss and Ben the Research Bear here. I am Andrew Wiebe. We come in on that little bit of a downer because we had a little bit of a downer effect when it came to the U.S. Men's National Team last week. I don't know that that's unfounded, but there was a positive this weekend. On Friday night, the U.S. taking on Peru at RFK Stadium, and they beat them 2-1. The third-place finishers in the Copa America going down. Josie Altidore with two goals in this game, back on form, so to speak. A nice performance overall from the U.S., if not a complete performance. I think that's the caveat that you have to throw out here. There were some positives. There were some also things that were a little bit concerning. Going down initially to Daniel Chavez's deflected goal. A lot to talk about on that play, Dave, but let's start with Josie Altidore. This has got to be encouraging. Is he just a guy you got to challenge him all the time? Otherwise, he gets a little bit complacent, or was this just a health thing?
No, I think it's a confidence thing. I think he scored for TFC, and so now he's confident for the U.S. Now he scored for the U.S. I don't think it's the being benched and being challenged that helped. He got an easy. I mean, he got himself a PK for TFC 2 weeks ago, and I think that's it.
He scored a couple of goals after that, too.
Yeah, exactly. He just needed one goal to open it up. I think there's something about his psyche that helps. And
maybe that's why Azed was so successful.
Yeah, because he
kept scoring. The goals were flowing, but he had that belief the whole time, and it's easy to have your confidence up.
And then we go look at the other side on Sunderland. He doesn't score, and all of a sudden it goes deeper and deeper. It was a game of two halves. The first half, they were not good. The U.S. national team was not good at all. The second half, they were very good. And I don't think it was actually down to substitutions. I think it was just mentality and a couple changes that they made. They came out. They played higher up the field. Zardes took guys on. Yedlin's obviously going to give you speed. Bobby Wood was a little bit quiet in this game. He dropped back to help defensively a couple times. I don't know that he's the guy to partner Josie on that October 10th game.
Yeah, I don't think – I think that's a step too far myself. You mentioned those substitutions. Halftime, three subs for Jurgen Klinsmann. Jeff Cameron coming in for Michael Orozco. Alvarado coming in for Omar Gonzalez, who got caught a little bit in no man's land on the goal. We'll talk about that in just a second. Mix Discrude on for Alejandro Bedoya. Johansson and Danny Williams coming on later. But this – sorry, Matt Beisler as well. Matt Beisler showed something in this game.
He looked really good in this game.
Yeah, and Jurgen Klinsmann did not keep him around. He will not be around for the Brazil game on Tuesday night, of which we are preceding here on SiriusXM Channel 85.
But he did say that he did what he had to do to prove that he deserves
to be around.
We saw
what we needed to see, I think, is what his words were. But I think we're starting to see exactly what we need to see from Jesse Zardes, Ben. I mean, this is – you start to see why Jurgen Klinsmann has kind of become obsessed with speed, especially why the DeAndre Yedlin experiment. I think Jordan Morris falls into that as well. The U.S. just looks more dangerous when they got two guys up there that can challenge the outside backs. And Zardes did that all night long. He was a menace.
Yeah, I mean, I've never been a huge fan of Jossi on the wing. I'm more of a fan of him up top. But here, especially the way he set up this team, it was easy for Jossi to get forward, to attack defenders, to put in crosses. I mean, he had Tim Ream behind him most of the game, who's not going to really get forward.
Stay at home, no doubt about that.
So he doesn't have to worry about defending really all that much. And he's just free. I mean, he's free to attack. He's free to take shots. He's free for everything. He was basically playing a free. Getting the ball and see what he can do.
The question is against Mexico now specifically, right? Because that's what we're talking about. This isn't a hypothetical.
Ultimately, this is all just prep for Mexico on October 10th.
But there's one specific squad you can look at. This isn't, what would happen in a World Cup. It's Mexico, and they are a team that's strong on the wings. They're a team that attacks from fullback. We don't know what it's going to look like yet under Tuca. It's not going to be
Tuca's teams at Tigres have always relied upon attacking fullbacks.
Right, but it's not going to be a five-man.
No, it's
not going to
be wingbacks. It's going to be a four-man backline.
But still, so the question is, will Zardes be an offensive factor if he has to do defensive work as a winger? You said it. Tim Ream, I thought, was very strong and solid in this game. So he's going to take some of that responsibility away. But if Zardes is your best attacking player, why not play him at forward and have him always be an attacking player? Why force him into defensive responsibilities if he's the newest?
It's the isolation, isn't it? You want to isolate him on one defender. Yeah. So if you have him in the middle with Josie A, it may just be that Klinsmann has seen them in training and the chemistry is not there. It isn't the Robbie Keane, Giassi's artist pairing that we saw last year in LA. Of course, Landon Donovan, a big help there. But in the central part of the field, he's got to be better in tight spaces. He's got to be better in the combination play. Out wide in this game, you get him out there and you just let him run. And his service, that was the thing that impressed me the most.
Service.
That was always a question with Zardes on the wing. His service was very good in this
game. But he can come wide if he's playing center forward. If you have a player like Josie, a physical player like Josie, who should occupy one, maybe two center backs, especially on it, balls cleared out, he can win that second knockdown ball and run at a defender, or he can find a way to float out wide and get the initial ball on the counter.
The only issue for the Mexico game is that Klinsmann said before this game that Beasley is a starter, a left back, if he's healthy. Beasley does not play like Tim Ream. He's gonna get forward a little bit more. He's not gonna bomb up the wing, but he's definitely gonna get more forward, which is gonna leave Jossi to play a little more defense.
Let's talk about the goal that the U.S. gave up in this game—a deflection. Daniel Chavez with the goal off of Omar Gonzalez's hip, his leg, whatever it may be. Ball into the middle of the area, and it's Omar, and it's pretty much that. That's it. Jermaine Jones is in the middle of the defense, basically playing a third center back spot. He is marking up there. Omar backs off the ball. A lot of people were harsh. A lot of people really pointed at Gonzalez on this goal and said, hey, that's on you. Dave, you saw it just a little bit differently.
First of all, I think Omar Gonzalez was wrong in the way he played it. So he's at fault. He's stepping back at the top of the 18 when he can't, and he steps forward too late. Bedoya also gets beat very easily to start this play. I don't like the idea that Jermaine Jones as a center midfielder is back between his center backs. I think he falls too deep. You said it. He's marking a guy. He's not being irresponsible. Right, he's trying to help his team, but I think he's doing it in the wrong way. And this has always been my problem with Jones, is he tries to do too much. And it causes more chaos than good, I think. You see, I didn't think Alejandro Bedoya was very good in the first half. Alejandro Bedoya plays center midfield in League One. I think the issue is he doesn't know where Jones is going to be, and so it's a struggle for him to make sure he's in the right place, and I thought that that's what happened on the goal as well, was that you have an attacker charging into the box on Omar, and there's no defensive midfielder at all to give him any cover.
Yeah, I kind of have this feeling back from the World Cup. I think about this from time to time. The reason I think we saw the best of Jermaine Jones in that sense was he played on that wing and the diamond, and yeah, he had defensive responsibilities, but he wasn't. They weren't terminal ones. You know what I mean? Like, if he made the mistake, he wasn't getting blown by, and the defense wasn't isolated. And we saw that in Costa Rica in qualifying. Can they find a way to get him back into a spot like that where he can be the marauding, you know? Yeah, I think one of his best attributes is that you don't know what he's going to do.
Exactly.
So you see it when he bursts forward, when he wins those balls in advanced spaces.
When he scores against Portugal, yeah, on a goal like that.
Yeah, but when he's withdrawn like that and his job is to hold, I'm not sure that's within his preferences or really his skill set.
Me and Ben Bear had a great debate about this for about an hour in a Ukrainian dive bar in the Lower East Side of Manhattan yesterday.
That sounds fun.
As you would.
Thanks for the invite, guys.
Yeah,
I've played the Simon Borg role here. Of course,
but we were talking about it. I think Jurgen puts Jermaine Jones in there because he does something special, but I think it's tough to rely on him. And you said it. The key at the World Cup was that you knew where Kyle Beckerman would be. It allowed Michael Bradley to play with more freedom, and it allowed Jermaine Jones to play with more freedom. Jermaine Jones is now playing that Beckerman role, and that means he has responsibilities, and that's not his game.
Yeah, it's been kind of a struggle to find him in a permanent spot for the U.S., hasn't it? All different places, center back included, although it looks like that experiment is over. So Brazil-U.S. on Tuesday night, that's a big game. As you said, we're just looking forward to U.S.-Mexico. That's all that matters at this point. It's all a big prep for that. For this game against Brazil, no Dempsey. He sticks with the Sounders. Beisler and Yarbrough back to their club sides. Michael Bradley and Jordan Morris in. A lot of talk about Jordan Morris. Where will he be for that October 10th game? Ben, where should he be? Olympics or big team?
Olympics.
Do you have a problem that he's not a professional player?
No, I'm not Simon.
I was just asking.
He's not going to start
just
for us
in
the U.S.
Chair.
He's not going to start for us against Mexico.
No.
Right? So why? So you're going to bring him on for 10 minutes?
Yeah.
But isn't that the most important game to the team?
Is he even the best? I mean, I love Jordan Morris, but like, is he the best option even? If Dempsey and Josie are starting, which I think they will, bring Johansson. You have Johansson off the bench. You have Bobby Wood. I mean, Jordan Morris has played really well when he's been
on the wing.
But you have enough options, and we need to qualify for the Olympics. And he's one of our best players for that team. And we're already missing Brooks and Yedlin for that team. So we have to. It's better for the program, I think, if Morris is within 23.
Better for the program. Let's talk about the program in general. This is a debate that Simon and I have had, and we're on. I don't know. I'm starting to come around with him. It's about that October 10th game, the CONCACAF Cup, U.S.-Mexico. Simon's claim, and R.I.P. Simon, well, not R.I.P., he's just not here today. He's just not here today. Hold off. He says this is the second biggest U.S.-Mexico game ever, behind the 2002 World Cup. What do we make of that?
I don't agree with it. They clinched the 2006 World Cup qualification with a victory over Mexico. They clinched the 2014 World Cup qualification with a victory over Mexico. The 2001, of course, the famous qualifier in Columbus was the first time that they knocked off Mexico.
So are you saying that the Gold Cup finals?
And all the Gold Cup finals.
All five of them.
I don't put the Gold Cup finals where the World Cup qualifiers are.
Well,
to me, the draw down in 97 in Mexico and the win in 2001 were bigger games. Because they were a step. What?
Not bigger games. They're just bigger results.
No, because they were in necessity.
You weren't going into those games saying, this is a huge game.
You were, because there was a necessity for the program to take that step to prove they were on equal footing with Mexico.
Are we talking about U.S. perspective? Are we talking about the U.S. and Mexico perspective?
U.S. perspective.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
All right. Well, let us know what you think at Extra Time Radio, extratimeatmlssoccer.com. Is this the second biggest game in U.S.-Mexico ever? I tend to be on your side, Dave. I put more credence into the World Cup qualifiers. Look, the Confederations Cup is nice, but it's not really a requirement. And ultimately, had they just won the Gold Cup, this never even would have been a conversation to begin with. Some other results for you from CONCACAF. Antigua and Barbuda knocked off Guatemala. They're going to go back to Guatemala on September 8th. That would be tomorrow. We'll see what. I don't know, I'm sorry. That's today, right?
Yeah.
September 8th is Tuesday.
Yeah, it is Tuesday.
So that should be interesting.
My holiday weekend really catching up to me.
We know the other qualifier is going to be a Caribbean team, so this one makes it whether or not they have to go to Central America or they play two Caribbean games. And Canada, we can't forget, of course, a 3-0 victory over Belize in the first leg. It's exciting. You're obviously putting them already in the next round,
which
is tough to do. But the next round will be exciting to see where this – it's a perfect barometer of how far this program's come in the last 4 years. Playing Honduras, playing Mexico again.
And probably El Salvador.
Are they a better team?
Yep.
Can they go in? And you know what? If you lose at Honduras, can you hold it to a 1-0 loss and then get a result at home?
Yeah, it was a tough result for Belize. They go home. We'll see what happens for them. Another one of note here, Nicaragua in Jamaica. Winning 3-2. So Jamaica's got a big hill to climb.
They were up 3-0 that game. Yeah.
Darren Maddox stepped up late with a goal that could have saved Jamaica's chances.
Yeah, big-time stuff from them. Justin Miram, a note from MLS. Justin Miram scoring his second international goal for Iraq against Thailand on Monday. As I said, any thoughts, you let us know. We're going to come back into the mailbag. A lot to get to here. Football versus football, what does that mean and how do we navigate it?
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hey, this is Kyle Beckerman of Real Salt Lake, and you're listening to Extra Time Radio.
Ama la tierra en que naciste. Ama la es una y nada más.
Back on Extra Time Radio. I am Andrew Weave. With me, David Gossman, the Research Bear. Man, this is you're in for the long haul.
I can't believe I made it to the mailbag.
I know,
all the way
to the mailbag.
But let's be serious here. Have you hydrated? Did you eat any potassium? And have you stretched?
No.
So you're going to cramp out after this. So you don't understand the physical undertaking.
Simon's got years and years of three-segment.
How many extra shirts did you bring to the office today?
I mean, I always bring three just in
case. Just in case you
sweat through the first one. You don't want to come out of here looking a little bit rough. Let's jump in here. Dash Martin from Brooklyn, New York. Guys, any thoughts why Sean Johnson is getting a call-up instead of Bill Hamid? Sean John heading in for this Brazil match. He will be replacing William Yarbrough. I think they've both been standing on their heads for their respective club teams, but I feel like I give Hamid the edge. Even in games where DC has been dismantled, I've seen strikers overthink shots merely because Hamid has stonewalled them so many times earlier in the game. I'm not sure I've ever seen a keeper have that kind of effect on a game. Well, Dash, I think the deal here is that he had that injury, and he had a little bit of a layoff, and Jurgen Klinsmann said before these games, we need to see more from both of them, and we need to see consistency game in and game out, and I think that injury probably is the issue. Personally, I think Bill Hamid has a higher ceiling long-term if he stays healthy, but we've seen over and over Sean Johnson's ability as a ball stopper. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, I'm way on the Bill Hamid train. I mean, you saw over the weekend.
You're the conductor?
I'm the conductor. I've been on since about 2011. Okay. Sean Johnson, you saw him over the weekend. He's just not – talk about consistency. He's very inconsistent. He's a great shot stopper, as you said. But you saw over the weekend, ball flies. He tries to go out and get a ball, flies over his head, and Lefebvre just has a sitter right there in front of him.
You don't
see Bill Hamid do that anymore. The problem that I think that Klinsmann sees with Hamid, he's the best shot stopper in the league by far, I think. Even better than Sean.
Certainly, I think the best presence in net.
The problem is, I think he likes goalkeepers that can play with their feet, and he's not the best with his feet. That's why he keeps on bringing in a Raimondo, who's not had a great year.
I think Raimondo is also the veteran presence. He keeps talking about him being a giver. At this point, if you're the odds-on number three, you're definitely the third goalkeeper. That's what you want because it is Guzan Howard 1 and 2. Absolutely no doubt about it.
And William Yarbrough gets called in when he's not even starting in Liga MX. And I think that has to do with his background coming up, playing a different style than Bill Hamid does.
Here's another question from Dash. I'm going to direct this one at Dave. He wants to know if we'll consider doing a goalkeeper-themed episode, talking to goalkeepers, maybe ranking the MLS ones. What specials do you want, Dave? I mean, we're putting Dave in charge of some specials.
We're going to be trying to do one special a month on a range of topics. Some will be book clubs. Some will be interesting topics. Some will be MLS history. So let us know what interests you, and you know if we could try and get inside the head of a goalkeeper, that could always be intriguing.
Yeah, that could be fun.
Because goalkeepers, in my understanding, are crazy.
You might get lost up in there. Might get lost in those heads. I think we're going to try to do an American Exports one. There's a couple interesting stories going around right now. So we'll update you on that, but I think for sure last year's around Christmas, those specials, some of our favorite episodes of all times. A lot of fun to do. Moving on to some of these MLS stories here. Ron Peck, a Timbers fan, he said he went to Brazil and watched Freddie Adu sit on the bench. Not very exciting, but he said it's funny how he got there. He went to Sao Paulo to see his son while he was studying abroad. He was living with a host family. The first night, they were all eating dinner, and he asked, "Hey, what do you want?" He was asked, "What do you want to do in Brazil?" He said, "I want to go watch some local soccer." The host father visibly grimaced, and he waits while he and his son resolve the issue in Portuguese. It turned out it caused him great emotional pain to take him to a game because his club wasn't there that week, and he'd have to take him to one of their competitors' games. After an hour of anguish, he came to a compromise he could handle. They went to his team's stadium, did the team store before the game, and then they went to the other game. They sat in the visitors' section because he could not be associated with those home
die
fans.
Hard.
Die hard stuff. Die hard stuff. Good story there from Ron Peck. Josh Wackett also chiming in here. He's a DC United fan in Atlanta who's warming up to Atlanta United.
FC.
Yeah, that's some that's like William Sherman stuff here. Watch out. Watch out. DC fans might take it out on you, Josh Wackett. He says this past summer he was in Moquegua, Peru. I think I got that wrong. On an archaeological dig. He found out about the local team who are in the second division. He went to several games over the 3 months he was there. Two of the players there have U.S. soccer and MLS ties. The goalie, Bruno Henriquez, who anybody – that ring a bell for anybody? Bruno Henriquez?
Not at all.
Can't say it does.
Mm-mm, not for me either. Apparently, he signed with the Rapids in 2008 but had visa problems and was never actually able to play. That, Josh, is a very around the – that's around the way connection. That's
you
the stuff I like.
You are a true MLS fan. If you know
yeah.
That.
Diego Chavarri, who's from New York, was also there. He trained with the USL edition of Orlando City and was called up for the US U23s at one point. He also played for them. So that's a random one from the Peruvian second division.
We also have archaeologists who listen to this show.
I know. It's a well-rounded group. It's a well-rounded group. Any more of those, let us know. We're still looking for them. I'm sure there's some funny ones out there. Anything with Joel Limpair will give you some real special swag for something along those lines. Moving on, Steve Heilman, a Sounders fan in Anchorage, Alaska. See, we're going all around the globe with this. He says he was watching Seattle-Toronto, found himself doing Simon Borg IR impressions, wants to know when Simon is going to make his triumphant return. What do we have to say to that, guys?
Whenever Simon can find the air to get up and breathe, right?
Yeah, yeah. Simon, a very busy guy, the managing editor here at MLSsoccer.com.
He also... You know, the bombacity is necessary at certain times, but it's unnecessary at certain times. And so that's why we can't have Simon too much, right?
Yeah, too much Simon, I think we've learned over the years is, well, it's too much Simon, and we start to get some complaints. But you need that just perfect amount
of always good.
Borg flavor. We get it every day in the office. We're very, very lucky to have it. We'll get it back on here for you very, very soon, folks. I know there are some folks that miss Simon. Steve also says he's going to be flying down from Seattle to Anchorage to take his 5-year-old son to his first live pro game. It's his two, actually. They're pumped, he says. October 4th against LA.
Oh, what a game.
Couldn't have chosen better. He's hoping that the Sounders are going to be back at it by then, but he's very excited to see LA's money. Well, all the squad LA's money that can buy on the field. Do we have any Sounders swag over there? Can we give them something?
We do not have anything currently. We can see if we can go out.
Like we have no Oyos? We don't have any Oyo guys?
Nothing left. We can see if we can go out and try and call something from the many Sounders distributors that we are so close with.
We'll do some work for you there, Steve. Maybe we'll have a little bit of something to give your son on the way down to the game, something to keep him busy, something to rep when he's down there watching this one. John Huth, Atlanta United FC, future fanatic. He says his third season following MLS. He watches two games a week. He watches all the condensed games on Monday, and he listens to ETR on his commutes. It's turned him into a diehard fan. Whoop, whoop. Bamo. What's up, John Huth? He's living in South Carolina at the time. This brings us to his question. It's SEC football time, and I think most of us know what that means, even if we haven't been in the South. He's now landed his newfound fandom in a tight spot on Saturdays, especially. This weekend, he was watching Alabama-Wisconsin.
You really have to bring up that game?
I do. Ben, the
really have to bring up that
How'd
game.
How'd that one end, Ben? I'm not a college football guy, so.
On Wisconsin, that's all I'm
on Wisconsin. On okay. Wisconsin, okay. I think I know probably.
I think
what
everyone knows
there.
Where Ben went to school. Now.
Yep. Anyway, yeah, Drogba's hat trick game on his computer. It was an overwhelming experience. He said everything going on at once. He wants to know how we balance our sport allegiances toward the end of the season. Baseball's rolling along. NFL comes in. You got college football. look, what is going on? Also, he says, keep up the good work and David Goss is the man. So I'm maybe John Huth is a fake person. This might be a fake.
I think this is David Goss himself.
Yeah, hey, by the way, speaking of that, I was broadcasting a Seton Hall women's soccer game Friday night, and a fan, an ETR fan, came up, recognized my voice, came over to say hi. I do apologize. I do not remember his name right now. There was a lot going on at the time.
You're so big time.
Thanks to him. Sasha Kleshchen was at the game as well.
Okay.
So I was the second most excited.
Did he go say hi to Sasha?
He said he got a selfie with Sasha.
Oh, okay. You didn't get a selfie, though.
No, no selfies with
Ben, how do you handle this? Because my advice would be don't watch college football. I'm just over the college football.
College football is a tough one with MLS because – so for me, I'm an NFL fan. I'm an NBA. I'm an MLB fan. But – Sundays is NFL and Saturday is MLS.
It's going
to
be tough though.
But
it's going to be tough though.
With the
Sunday.
Two games, yeah.
Here's the way I handle it. You know, I work every Saturday night basically, so I'm here in the office. So I have six TVs.
Yeah.
So my suggestion would be to go get six TVs, and then you're good. I had the Wisconsin game on one TV. Yeah. I had two on Montreal, Chicago. Two on. New England, Orlando, it's all good. So just go and get six TVs and you'll be fine.
Stock up on TVs. That's the advice from Ben the Research Bear. Like I said, I just watch MLS, man. I'm a KU football fan. We saw this weekend we can't even snap the ball. So stick with Didier Drogba and the rest of them. That's all from us today. Big thanks to Oscar Pareja, Profe, for joining us here on the show. Always good stuff from him. We always enjoy him. Thanks to you guys. Dave Goss, Ben the Research Bear. I am Andrew Wiebe. We'll see you back on Thursday.